Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren, speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hootenoggers, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils. So keep it tuned right here. Shelley Wright is back in the studio, unharmed, unfazed.
Unharmed. Did you hear my reward? I just cracked it open.
She just cracked it open. A cold beer. Unfortunately, it's not, and the Pepsi man hadn't been around recently, so we got the only thing left in the vending machine, a Diet Pepsi. But you got your Snickers bar.
I do. I'm so excited by this. This is fabulous.
Shelley is genuinely excited, folks. I think that made you feel good to actually go into the field.
It did. I had missed it. I had.
That was kind of neat. If you weren't listening last hour, you're going to want to go back and listen to the podcast. It was fun. Last segment, we dropped Shelley off in the abandoned station on the back of the property.
Well, it's not abandoned.
It's
currently uninhabited at this hour.
It's the sales office, so it's pretty much
right. During the day.
It's not like everything's shut down over there. And yeah,
there are sections.
There is wattage pumping high and low.
Mostly
over there.
Low.
But we dropped Shelley off over there all by her lonesome, locked her in.
Locked me in.
Yeah, and you were down in the, what is now kind of just storage area where the old fallout shelter
mm-hmm.
was.
Yeah.
And there's a decontamination shower in the corner and old filing cabinets. And, it looks very Cold War.
I actually own the old, what's the meter called?
Geiger counter?
Yes, from down there. 1964.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very, very neat. And Shelley, you didn't really... You didn't face any ill effects or...
No, I didn't face any ill effects. It was very warm in there, but I did feel like, there were one or two things kind of following me around, seeing what I was gonna do, what I was gonna get into. It didn't feel bad. But I mean, obviously what is it? WWNC has been around for 100 years now?
About the 95.
I mean, there's a lot of history. History is full. You can feel history. You can feel the layers and layers of emotions that have passed through these halls. So, yeah, it may be that nobody's in there right now and the lights aren't on, but it's not empty.
But you did put the call out.
I
so
did put the
who
call
knows
out.
What who knows what might come of that?
Well, this is true. But there is one ghost that everybody talks about, and I firmly believe that he's in the bathroom, in the women's bathroom. And sometimes, not all the time, but he's
That's here in the news station.
Yeah,
in
that's
the,
here in the news station.
That's actually just me.
But there was something weird that happened here one time. One of the engineers came into this studio one night. We weren't, on the air at the time. We were kind of in a break. And I just started asking about that ghost. And he's talking to me, and it was just for a few minutes, but it was nice. And then he left, and I think Forrest was here. Forrest was producing. And all of a sudden, all the lights started flickering on and off. The hall lights, the lights in here. I think the hall lights were red and flashy. And, I mean, everything. I'd never seen that happen, ever. And it was for quite a while. And it never did it again. And I've been here for, 8 years? That's never happened. And the fact that we were talking about the ghost, a lot of times when I'm in places and I talk about a ghost, there will be lights that turn on and off. I go to a haunted salon and we investigated there one time. It was a lot of fun. But anytime you talked about the ghost, you would start hearing more things, and the lights would start flickering on and off. And, well, even when I didn't talk about the ghost, I was waiting in the waiting room one time, and I'm looking into the room where you get your hair done, where all the magic happens. And I looked up just in time to see product fly off the little cart. Nobody was around it. It just flew off. So, you know, I'm a ghost magnet. Who knows? You guys may have things happen tonight. Not you, Sam, because you don't want to.
And I told y'all when we were leaving there about, like, when I set the alarm, about how I've had to go in there late at night by myself to drop off keys for vehicles or something, and it won't let you set the alarm if it detects movement. And it's a big building. It's long. And so, you know, it's just me in there, and I go set the alarm, and it's like, cannot set the alarm, movement detected. And you're like, okay, in quadrant 4, that's not where I am. What or who is in here? And you try setting it again, and it's like, beep, beep, beep. And that means it's not set. And you're like, set, go. And it's like movement detected.
The motion detector is picking something up in another part of the building.
So do you wait until it passes, or do you go look for it?
I think that night I probably just locked the door and took off and was just hoping that in the morning nobody was like, why is the door? I mean, because it's still locked from the outside, but the alarm was not set. I was like, I skedaddled.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, that could be a little creepy. Anyway, Shelley has safely returned from the old studio, and it brings about an idea we talked about, and I think we can just throw this out there because there's nothing unethical about mentioning local businesses that we frequent, especially in connection with a story that belongs on Speaking of Strange. You go to Marco's Pizzeria.
Right.
Which one?
Merriman.
And that's out there.
Yeah.
That's out there near Fresh Market, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I still haven't figured out, Shelley, exactly. It may have been on the other side of the street, but as far back as, shortly after World War II, maybe earlier than that, but certainly the 1940s, in that immediate area was Chez Paul. Chez Paul was a classy, upscale dining establishment on the level of a Sky Club or something like that.
Wow.
And it also had a reputation as a speakeasy. In later years, they found a loophole in the law that a lot of establishments worked around the law by brown bagging. Either you bring your own beverage or they have private lockers in the back behind the counter so that people who were regulars would bring a bottle of rum or a bottle of scotch or whatever, and they would keep them in the cabinet back there. And when you came in to dine, you would tell the bartender or whatever, I would like to get into my locker. And then you could help yourself to whatever liquor you had stored there, and the bartender would be allowed to mix your drink for you. But
very
it was
cool.
Just a weird thing that you had to own the entire bottle.
Was that tied into like the Asheville Country Club? Because that was over near there?
That was a little further around, but Chez Paul was an entity unto itself and quite an establishment. Music and dancing, and I've been told by people that it's where a lot of the movers and shakers went, the classy establishment, especially early on. And I've had people tell me recently that when mom and dad wanted to celebrate something in high fashion, they would get all dressed up and go to Chez Paul, because that was a very fancy spot. But certainly that was a place that many people came and went, and there had to have been a lot of energy there. I did find references in the newspapers to, some fisticuffs. Over the years, people would get into it there, and somebody might pull a knife or break a bottle over somebody's head. There were some rowdy things happen when people drink,
you know.
So there were those sort of incidents in some of the old news items about Chez Paul. Another sad thing, Gene Brown. I found that for seasons running along in the 60s, Gene Brown, a local musician, would be the house band at Shea Paul, the Gene Brown Combo. And I had heard this story before, but I hadn't made the connection. Gene Brown played a Hammond B3 organ, and everybody says that he was just a really great musician. Along in the, may have been the 2000s, 90s or 2000s, Gene Brown and his band were still playing, and he had played at Vincenzo's that night, and then was walking home up Charlotte Street and was mugged and killed. You remember hearing that?
I do.
Gene Brown had a history as a musician dating back, you know, 40 years or more, and then was killed walking home from a gig one night. So that hasn't been that many years ago, if you remember it, has it, Shelley?
No, it hasn't.
So, yeah, there is a connection there. Just maybe out there at Marco's Pizzeria, the ghost of Gene Brown. I don't mean to say that if it's distasteful to friends or loved ones.
You said he was walking home from Vincenzo's. That's nowhere near Marco's, though.
No, but in the old days, he played at Marco's. In the later era, he played at Vincenzo's. He was killed walking home from Vincenzo's. But now Shelley's out there at Marco's where Shea Paul was, and Gene's band used to be the house band at Shea Paul. That's what I'm saying, is that across time, and we begin to see this with ghosts, quote-unquote, that they aren't really attached, or they aren't necessarily or out of necessity attached to a certain place or a certain time. At any time in their life, if something was significant to them or a place was held a certain attachment for them, they could return there after they've disembodied. So who knows? Maybe that's something to think about out there at Marco's. Think of the name Gene Brown and see if that rings any bells or if you get any feedback. So this is Speaking of Strange, and we're communicating with the spirits as best we can, putting ourselves out there anyway. And we'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Vance Pollock. I'm in the studio with investigator Shelley Wright and producer Sam the Animal Steel. We talked a little bit about Squatch Rocket earlier. That's what we said we were going to play. You did find a live version of it that's not really up to par, in your opinion.
I just didn't think so.
Sam did share it with me, and it's a pretty solid instrumental. And
Vance just liked
the idea of a Sasquatch on a Kawasaki passing you on the highway at night.
It was a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And Red Honey. The guy's still playing Red Honey?
We
kind of on hiatus.
We're technically on hiatus.
Yeah. Okay.
We never broke up. We just stopped playing.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll happen again. Maybe Squatch Rocket will ride again one day. But yeah, on the subject of Squatch Rockets, there are a couple of neighboring counties that have had their Sasquatch reports in recent weeks. One from down the mountain in McDowell County, several reports coming in from McDowell County, and then a video from over in Henderson County. And we were just taking a look and reading over some of these things. The video from Hendersonville, that's posted on the Asheville Citizen Times webpage.
Which has already booted me off. So I can't get back to the story we were reading because it says, hope you enjoyed your complimentary access.
Okay, here you go.
Shelly's got it on her phone there.
We'll pull it up here. There are ways around these things.
Well, I've got a subscription to the online.
Well, I found a different outlet here. So this was, I guess, a couple weeks ago, maybe the 6th, somewhere in that neighborhood of August. There were some sightings outside of Asheville and McDowell County, I guess is the one that we were reading about.
Right.
And you know, some people were like, we saw Sasquatch. And apparently Sasquatch has a name. And his name is Gawain McGregor of Minneapolis. He's a plumber. And in his spare time, he enjoys putting on pelts of dead animals and recreating the Epic of Gilgamesh in random people's backyards. Or
he's kind of LARPing.
I guess. What do you call LARPing by yourself in a different state?
I don't know.
Trespassing, I think. I mean, that's a good way to get shot around
LARP
here, really.
Passing, yeah. Anyway.
But, So
what's Gawain up to?
It says that he was spotted in the woods outside of Asheville, dressed in his homemade suit of raccoon pelts, and managed to get a pack of Sasquatch hunters in the area very excited. The excitement soon spread online after photos and reports were shared with a Facebook page called Bigfoot 911. News of the Bigfoot spotter's tale of seeing details of the creature eyes farther apart than human eyes lasted only a few days before McGregor stepped in to correct the record. The Bigfoot they'd seen was actually just him in a very furry suit. But the original witnesses don't believe it, claiming this Carolina Sasquatch was 8 feet tall. So, was there two Sasquatches, or was there a Gawain McGregor LARPing to the Epic of Gilgamesh and raccoon pelts? And this is an aside. Gawain McGregor, who makes a living as a plumber in Minneapolis, says that he has had encounters with the allegedly mythical beast in three different states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. He describes Bigfoot as an angel of the forest and says that he's looked him in the eye. And he says that he doesn't think Sasquatch is a living wild animal per se. He explains, you have all these sightings and no one has been able to find a body, so you either have these encounters that aren't real or there's a supernatural explanation.
I loved some of the quotes from Gawain about how he discovered the Epic of Gilgamesh.
He was
at a Wednesday night Bible study.
How he transitioned from that to the pelts.
Yeah, I'd always been a Christian, attending church on Sundays and Bible studies on Wednesday nights. And on Wednesday nights, we really get to dig into the essence.
Say it in a Minnesota accent, though.
I don't know how to.
Oh, gosh.
Gawain McGregor.
Oh, gosh. So we were at that Wednesday night Bible study, eh?
Yeah, so he got really taken with these old gods.
That, I was taken.
Yeah, these Old Testament, they talked about some of the old tribal deities of the Old Testament, and he soon discovered the Epic of Gilgamesh, and he was fascinated by this character, Enkidu. So he's dressing up as Enkidu and wandering in the wilderness as sort of an homage, sort of a worship, if you will, of these characters from the Epic of Gilgamesh. And how that becomes a Bigfoot sighting in the photographs of Gawain in his Enkidu costume. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
The Bigfoot 911 group who claims that they did not see a plumber from Minnesota in raccoon pelts, but in fact did see a Sasquatch, said that they had lured him out with glow sticks. Because apparently glow sticks attract Sasquatch. Maybe Sasquatch is a raver.
I was actually thinking about, do you remember back in the early days of the internet, there was a viral website about the guy who made his own Tron suit?
No.
He was an older guy, very ordinary looking guy with a mustache. Kind of reminds me of the guy from Office Space that they just move him to the basement and don't even realize he's still working.
Milton.
Yeah. And this guy, this Milton-like character, had designed his own Tron suit out of a unitard, and he had he had put the designs on it with like glow sticks, and his website was pretty amazing with photographs documenting his creation of the Tron suit. But I was just thinking, if the guy in the Tron suit were out LARP passing,
which for,
you know,
the uninitiated is live action role playing,
right? It's cogent that you bring that up. Live action role playing, it's a fun word to throw around, LARP. LARPing and live action role playing and trespassing. I've just coined this term tonight, LARP passing. So if the guy in the Tron suit were LARP passing, you know, in a remote area, he may be mistaken for an alien or something like that. I think generally if you see a being.
Or Slim Goodbody.
Right? What if you saw Slim Goodbody out in the middle of the woods? Yeah, and you didn't identify it as Slim Goodbody.
Do you know where Littleton, North Carolina is?
Not.
Does that ring a bell? Halifax County?
Yeah, Halifax County's down near the coast, I believe.
Apparently, it's become a hotbed for sightings of Sasquatch, and there's a cryptozoology and paranormal museum there with a Sasquatch display.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've always thought it would be kind of fun to dress as like a Grim Reaper or something and just run from like stone to stone out in Riverside Cemetery when there were tour groups going through, just like run from one crypt over to the next real quick and then hide again and see how many people.
I do that at the middle school playground.
And you better.
And it was frowned upon, I'll tell you.
Yeah, stay away from the schools.
My probate said I wasn't allowed over there.
I can imagine not. But anyway, yeah, sometimes live action role playing in places you don't belong can cause quite a stir. And that's what Gawain McGregor.
We'll just call him
Gawain.
Down here it's Gawain.
Gawain McGregor. Gawain the Twang's a Thing. Said that it was him, but
Gilgamesh.
Other people don't believe so. Good old Enkidu. the Hendersonville video starts out with what sounds like a kid saying, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God," and makes it doesn't sound super convincing to begin.
The dog was definitely riled up.
Yeah, the dog was barking at something, but if you were LARPing as Sasquatch,
that was too
in
close.
The field, would the dog be? Yeah, I think the dog would bark at somebody anyway.
The Sasquatch in the video of which you're describing, the guy was like 25 feet away from whatever that was. Sasquatch is just roaming through somebody's mater patch in Henderson County. I think he's probably a little higher up.
Yeah, it wasn't very convincing to me, but maybe like Josh used to do the UFO, UFO experience. Meetups out in Madison County. We should start doing like some Squatch hoax sort of stuff, just to see how good we could hoax a Sasquatch appearance. I think I could make a pretty darn good
Sasquatch.
One of us would get shot. Yeah, knowing our luck.
Hmm. Yeah, 266 guys.
Nix that idea. Yeah. We'll be right back. Speaking of strange.
How things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark night. It's a dark night. Changing, strangers moving in. A new boy fell for a local girl when she made eyes with him. She was young and pretty, no stranger to other men. But windows were being locked at night, the old lines drawn again.
Dark night here in the mountains of Asheville, North Carolina. This is Asheville's landmark paranormal radio show, 15 years strong, coming right out of the heart of the Smokies, bringing you true dark stories.
Well, wouldn't it be the heart of the Blue Ridge?
Is it the heart of the Blue Ridge?
Well, the Smokies, aren't they in Tennessee?
I think this is the Smoky Mountains. I always thought this was Smoky Mountains. Is Asheville not in the Smoky Mountains?
I think we're in the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Okay. I think we're in the Smokies.
I'll look it up.
We're in the mountains.
Yeah, we're in the mountains. Blue Ridge, Smokies, Appalachian. I don't like that.
It's Appalachian.
Appalachian.
It's Appalachian. I watched an Andrew Zimmern in Asheville episode. It wasn't one of the eating gross stuff, but there's another Andrew Zimmern food show where he just travels around and eats.
He was supposed
at
to
local
eat
restaurants.
On my friend's mom's porch in that episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because her son-in-law at the time was the head chef at Lobster Trap.
Okay.
And he was going to do the trout ribs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, but I didn't see Lobster Trap, and I guess it didn't happen.
No, it ended up getting mixed at the last minute.
Well, anyway, Andrew Zimmern in Asheville, and I don't think I could count how many times he said Appalachian. Appalachian.
So many people do.
Appalachian. It sounds more sophisticated, I guess, more college educated.
Sounds ignorant to me.
Appalachian. Yeah, you don't say Appalachicola when you're talking about the town in Florida. Appalachicola. No, it's Appalachicola, so of course it's Appalachian. But over at the Nature Center, I noticed as you walk in, they've got a display about some animals, oddly enough, at the Nature Center. But it's called Appalachian Station. And I thought, oh, I got it. If you mispronounce Appalachian, it rhymes. Appalachian Station. But anyway, so it kind of...
To answer your question from earlier, I'll say that we're both right, me being slightly more right than you. Within the Blue Ridge Province are two major national parks, the Shenandoah National Park in the northern section and the Great Smoky Mountains National Park in the southern section. So the Great Smoky right. Mountains are within the Blue Ridge
Well,
Mountains.
The national park is, but what constitutes the Smoky Mountains? Anyway, the Blue Ridge and the Smokies.
I'm working on it.
Okay. We should know this. Anyway, Shelley has got a story she thinks that makes pretty good stuff. I was fascinated by the thought of this. It's it ties in with Wright's Coin Shop, one of our sponsors here at Speaking of Strange. Our friend Greg Capps, he had come into possession of a coin that might have had some bad juju.
I think it did. And I have known him forever. And he just casually brought it up about a month ago. Oh, by the way, I used to have this cursed coin. And of course, I'm like, but you've been holding out on me. So apparently, you know, coin people do this. They like to trade coins back and forth. And he had a friend who, I think he lived somewhere around Seattle area a few years ago. And he sent a big batch of coins to Greg. And he just threw in this other one for free, the one that we're talking about. Just threw it in for free, didn't know anything about it, so just gave it to him. So Greg's researching it, and there was this weird word that was etched across the top of it. It was Tufeltot. So he looks it up. Tufel, if I'm pronouncing that right, is the German word for devil. And it had some really weird-looking things on it, candelabra. Had the letter 3. It had, you know, a couple of other things that it was just weird. And so anyway, he's trying to do some research on it. But basically, it's kind of a homemade thing. Somebody had one of those blank slugs probably and just kind of etched their own things into it. But strange things started happening. And he didn't. Obviously, I mean, he's not a superstitious person at all, but he just kept having this string of bad things happening to him. He had been at this job for 8 years. Jobs became really scarce for him. He lost that job after 8 years. He was searching for another one, could not find anything. And, you know, Greg's a very fun person, very easy to get along with. And, you know, people like that have an easy time finding jobs. No, he didn't. His birth mother died. He seems like there were a couple of other things that happened. But he had the coin for a year, and it was during that time that he realized, well, you know, maybe this has something to do with the coin. I wasn't having all this bad luck before, but maybe this has something to do with it. And he finally got rid of it. He even gave me the exact location where he threw it into the Swannanoa River. It was like exit 55, I believe it was. And just tossed it in there, and immediately the bad luck just stopped. You know how that is, Sam, right? After the whole voodoo doll thing?
Yes. The whole voodoo doll thing.
Things went back to normal pretty quickly, and
the voodoo doll thing. Good listeners, regular listeners know the story, but we can recap that briefly. Our good friend Joshua P. Warren sent you and Sam a gift from New Orleans.
Yes.
Voodoo dolls.
Yes, almost matching voodoo dolls. Although mine was pink and Sam's was red. And they were really striking, really, really cool. This was on a Thursday, I believe. And brought it home that night, put it by my bed, and I just was happy to have it. The next morning, couldn't find my cat. Where's my cat? Where's Lola? She is always around. I called to her, couldn't find her anywhere. And I'm starting to panic because she's an inside cat, and this is just not like her. So I listened, and I heard this faint scratching behind a wall. So I found her in my laundry room behind the washer, behind the wall. There's an access panel, and I don't know how she got in there. She looked a little confused herself, but very happy that I did find her. And then later on that night, I parked in such a place where I could actually see my car from the restaurant that I was in, which normally wouldn't mean anything except that I went out. When I got back in my car, I looked, and the back seat was pushed all the way down. But you have to get in the trunk and then unlatch something to get it to go down. That was just weird. And other weird things were happening. I called Sam. He'd had already had some really bad things. I think when I got a hold of him, he was in the emergency room. He was having bad things already happening to him.
Yeah, and like you said about Greg Capps and the cursed coin, Sam is not an overly superstitious sort of character, but you started having a run of bad luck after the voodoo dolls showed up, didn't you, Sam?
It did start happening. I mean, and as a rationalist, I'm bringing this into the light. I'm trying to bring in radical rationalism.
Okay.
Yeah. Not radical right or left, but radical rational. Yeah, I mean, there could be other things to be like, oh, it could have been this, could have been that. But definitely the appearance of this voodoo doll, much like Greg Brady's tiki doll in the Brady Bunch episode where they go to Hawaii, brought about the start of a string of bad luck, which continued until me and Shelley went down to the river like Neil Young and disposed of it in the rain.
The dark of the night, the fog, the rain. It was so creepy. So scary.
I was a little girl. I jumped up in the air and screamed like a little girl. We ran.
So is that a pretty good standard way to dispose of cursed items, to pitch them into the river?
Well, it was for the voodoo dolls, and it seemed to be for the coin. You know, some people burn things, but, you know, burning usually isn't a very good way to get rid of things. And, you know, with Ouija boards, there are stories of people who get freaked out by Ouija boards, and they'll, you know, put lighter fluid all over that thing and light it up and find it the next day where they used to keep it. It's crazy. It's, yeah, crazy weird. My Ouija boards, my spirit boards at Nevermore, they wouldn't do that. I'm sure.
No.
They wouldn't do that.
No. You definitely need to get by Nevermore and check out Shelley's selection. Some of the spirit boards that Shelley has there, far beyond the playthings of childhood days. The one that you had out there at Byrish House last year, very, very nice, decorative, carved. Go to Nevermore Mystical Arts, 1271 Sweeten Creek Road, or look them up online. Nevermore Mystical Arts, that's Shelley's shop, and it's a great one. We'll be right back after these messages.
Thank you.
back to Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Vance Pollock. I'm in the studio with Shelley and Sam, and this is the waning moments of hour two. And, coming up Monday, the big solar eclipse. What are your plans? Reach out to us. Shoot us a message on Facebook. Post it in the group there. That would be a fun conversation to get going on. I mean, there are eclipse parties going on out there. And there are people planning to get in the car and travel quite some distance on potentially congested highways to get to the best spot to stand and watch the eclipse happen. I'm going to be out in Leicester for the eclipse, up on a hilltop, watching the eclipse on Monday. So, yeah, I'm not going to try to go for the totality. That seems to be a big word in the language of the eclipse, the path of totality. Also sounds like a religious text. Maybe it was something from the Epic of Gilgamesh, the path of totality. oh, my goodness. Yeah, cursed items. I can kind of relate to that. I have a couple other personal experiences with not pitching things into the river, but throwing things into the ocean, which I guess is sort of the same concept. Shelley, are you familiar with Four Thieves Vinegar?
Yes.
Okay. One ritual that the lady Lois, the lady at the Botanica in the town where I grew up when we were just teenagers, she told a friend of mine to get rid of this girl who he had tried to break things off with, but she just wouldn't leave him alone. Lois said, write her name on a piece of parchment, roll it up, and put it in a bottle of Four Thieves Vinegar, and pitch that bottle of Four Thieves Vinegar out into the ocean, because he had said, yeah, we're going down to Coco, I'm going to go down to the beach for the weekend or whatever. And Lois said, get a bottle of this Four Thieves Vinegar and write this girl that's giving you trouble, write her name on a piece of parchment, roll it up, put it in the bottle. And he did that, and to my knowledge, she backed off. She kind of let it go, but she had really been pestering him and hounding him up until that point. Have you heard of any other uses for Four Thieves Vinegar?
An ad for Four Thieves Vinegar?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if Shelley,
have you heard of any other uses for Four Thieves Vinegar?
It's not a brand name, Sam. It sounds like a brand name, but it's a thing.
Thought it was a brand name.
It's not really something you. Four Thieves Vinegar. Yeah, it's a thing.
My bad.
Do you have any, Shelley?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. What do you know about the properties or the uses of Four Thieves Vinegar?
It is going to take a little bit longer than we have to explain now. But yeah, I do have Four Thieves Vinegar and Chinese wash, and there are a couple. Peace water and war water.
Florida water. That's more of just a fragrance, isn't it?
You can use it to make offerings on your altar. That's another thing that you can do with it. And I did have some, but I sold it. Had some Hoyt's cologne. I sold that last week, too. So I need to stock up on a few more things.
Wow. Here's a bottle of Four Thieves Vinegar that says old-time root doctors tell us that they have used Four Thieves Vinegar for their own personal protection, and to rule, control, and foment dissent among enemies, to cause confusion among your enemies. So if there's someone who is troubling you and you put their name in a jar of the vinegar and pitched it in the ocean, maybe that's right in line with the traditional use of the thing. Lois was this older lady. I believe she may have been Native American, or at least part. She reminded me of an older American Indian. woman, but she was very knowledgeable about all the things that they sold there in the botanica and the herbs and the commanding pepper. Are you familiar with commanding pepper? Graveyard dust, all that sort of goofers dust,
yeah,
lodestones, yeah, and all that sort of stuff. Very fascinating.
I tell you, you put some of that hoofers dust in a sock.
The grand days of hanging out at a botanica, and now luckily Asheville has a shop where you can hang out and talk about the alleged uses of some of these things, and that is Nevermore Mystical Arts, where they sell Four Thieves vinegar.
You can use it now, all together.
1271 Sweeten Creek Road. Yeah, this is Joshua P. Warren speaking of Strange. And coming up, the Dark 30, so it's done for all the decent people. You can tune out for the, the brave and foolhardy. Stick around. Yeah, you got company. We'll be right back.